Well, Paul has taken us through a survey of 1 Samuel over the last month, and now we're going to pick up individual topics in 1 Samuel and treat them with a little more detail. And so this morning, our topic is Hannah. But I want to ask you a question, first of all. Give me a show of hands. How many of you have unanswered prayers? Most of you? All right. Some people keep praying faithfully. Some people think this is, well, I don't want to bother God with this so much. And some believe that they should pray, and then if they wait for the answer, that's faith. And then some people just give up. I think Hannah gives us such an example of how to pray and how God answers. Jesus has a wonderful example in Luke chapter 18, where he has a widow come up to a judge and ask him for justice. That's all she asked for, justice. And he keeps turning her away. And finally he says, because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice, so that she won't eventually come and attack me. Jesus sometimes exaggerates his examples. She won't come and attack me. We're not going to go and attack God. But God wants us to keep after him. He wants us to continue in prayer until he answers. I'm going to read this morning from 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you'd like to follow in your Bible, of course, you're welcome to do so. There was a certain man from Ramathane, a Zuphite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jehoram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, the Ephraimite. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, the man went up from his town to worship at and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two infamous sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and all her sons and daughters, but to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival, that's the word in my text, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, here's the typical husband, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? We'll pause there and I'll pick up the rest of the text in a minute. But I want to ask you a question. We have been through this at the first week of February, and now we've just read this part of the story again. Just shout it out. What is your main impression from the story of Hannah?
She got a tough situation.
Tough situation. Okay. Anyone else?
Disappointment.
Disappointment.
is bully?
the current term is bully. She had a bully in the family.
Humiliation and shame.
Good.
Probably a little bit of jealousy.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Good.
Lonely.
Sorry?
She's lonely.
Lonely? Okay.
She feels not
understood. Okay. Well, let me give you, let me put it like this. Suppose that a family comes in here on Sunday morning and he is going to introduce the family and he says, "My name's Elkanah and this is my wife Hannah and this is my other wife Penina and these are our kids. And we've just come to town and we're looking for a church home." What would you say? I mean, that's one thing that impresses me about the story of Hannah right up front. She's got a co-wife. That seems to me rather striking. Well, before we get into the actual story of Hannah, I would like to mention a few points. And the first one is polygamy. Polygamy was part of the culture in both the Old Testament and New Testament times, although possibly, I don't know this, that possibly not as much in the New Testament. God in his law in the Old Testament forbade a number of things. He forbade murder, he forbade stealing, he forbade covetousness. He did not forbid polygamy. He regulated it. He told polygamous families how they were to act in relation to one another. He did not forbid slavery. He told masters and slaves how to conduct themselves between. Why? I don't know. I don't know. And in fact, I understand from others that in African churches today, for example, they're still dealing with that issue. And different churches have different policies regarding polygamous families who enter the church. And so that's still an issue. And of course, we're still living with the vestiges of slavery in our culture today. So, why did God not forbid polygamy? Why did God not forbid slavery? I don't know. So that's, I'm sorry, that's my answer. I don't know why. It's one of those questions that we'll get an answer to someday that I'm looking forward to when I go back to class. The second thing I want to talk about is the issue of dysfunctional families. Have you noticed how many dysfunctional families there are in the early Old Testament? I mean, almost. There is almost no functional family in the early days of the Old Testament history. It's amazing. Here is Elkanah, and he's got these two wives, and clearly Hannah is his favorite. And then Penina, probably called Penny, just persecutes Hannah continually. And what does Elkanah do? He says, "Am I not enough for you?" A little dysfunctional. You know, there's Cain and Abel, there's Noah and his family, there's Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and there's Isaac and Rebekah. It goes on and on and on. Let me make a point. Some of us can, I'm extremely fortunate, but some of you perhaps can look back on dysfunctional families. You can look back on a time when you were raised in a family that wasn't exactly functional. God can work through that. God can work through you. God doesn't have to have functional families to do his work. God is God, and God is a God of grace, and God is a God of power. And I cannot look back on a dysfunctional family and make an excuse for not serving God the way I should. God is good. The next issue I want to touch on is the issue of childlessness. You know, children were a sign of God's blessing in the Old Testament, and perhaps they are to many today as well. Lineage was crucial in the Jewish nation. Children carried on the family legacy. It was a matter of family honor. It was a means of caring for aged parents that they had children. Now we have Social Security. And it was a measure of a woman's worth, how many children she could bear. It was a serious, serious issue. And Hannah had no children for years. For years. Peninnah had a number of children, and so we're talking about a continuation of years. That's the situation in which Hannah finds herself. The story actually starts out, as we have read it, with, it sounds like Elkanah's story. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. That's trouble right there, that Hophni and Phinehas were the priests. But I kind of get the impression from the story that Eli was semi-retired, that he's sitting back by the... He was sitting by the door of the temple when he saw Hannah's lips moving and thought she was drunk. And I kind of get the impression that the boys were carrying on the business and Eli was sitting back there semi-retired. Well, because Hannah was the favorite of Elkanah, he gave the meat, you know, the meat from the sacrifice to the others, but he gave her a double portion. He gave her extra. So a word about eating. What are they doing eating meat from the sacrifices? Well, apparently the idea was this, and I use the peace offering or the fellowship offering as an example, that the sacrifices were shared meals between God and the priests and the person who offered the animal. So the fat and certain organs were burned up on the altar. That was God's portion. And then the breast and the right thigh were given to the priest. And then the rest of the meat was given to the family. And it was put in the pot and cooked and given to the family, and then the family would sit over here and have a picnic lunch. And you can imagine family after family, as they brought their offerings, joining the crowd and having an extended time of eating together. That's the situation at the tabernacle, at the tent of meeting at Shiloh, all right? Now, we need to read on. Verse 9. Once, so all that's been background. Everything so far has been background. Now we come to the story. Once, when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now, Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house, and in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow, saying, Lord Almighty, if you would only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. That's a pretty radical promise, right? You give me a son and I'll give him back to you. As she kept on, verse 12, as she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, how long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine. Not so, my Lord, she replied. I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my grief, my great anguish and grief. Eli answered, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. She said, may your servant find favor in your eyes. Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. So this is the story of one annual visit to the tabernacle. The offering is made, the meat is cooked, they're having their meal. And at some point, either Hannah's finished or she interrupts her meal and she gets up. And she, maybe she moves a little closer to the tent of meeting, and Eli sees her and she is pouring out her heart to God. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. Verse 11, Lord Almighty, if you will only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. It was coincidental that I was reading yesterday morning in the Psalms, and I came across this statement. I will come to your temple with burnt offerings and fulfill my vows to you. Vows my lips promised and my mouth spoke when I was in trouble. Apparently that was a habit in Old Testament days that people made vows. That people said, God, if you give me this, I'll give you that. I vow that I will. And have any of you liked to give? Sure, we know people who have made vows to God. Lord, if you save us out of this situation, I will. And they have something to promise God. Eli saw her lips moving and thought she was drunk. Here's what one commentator said. I was just struck by these words. The old priest may have seen so many ungodly women with his sons that he could no longer discern who came to the temple to pray and who came to mess around. That's how bad it was. I mean, I think that's an accurate description of how bad it was in those days. Here are Hannah's words in verse 15. I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief. That's where Hannah was in her heart. Eli could discern by this point, when she's actually addressing him, he could discern that in fact she was a godly woman and not a drunkard. And he answered, 17, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him. Go in peace. Now, I take that to be a blessing. And here's, you can correct me afterwards, here's how I understand blessings. I understand blessings as prayer in a different form. So if I say, God bless you, God hears those words, and takes them as a request. Right? So I think that's what's happening here. Eli is blessing Hannah, and Hannah says, thank you, thank you, thank you. You have blessed me. God has heard your words. She said, verse 18, may your servant find favor in your eyes. Then she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. She received the blessing. She took the blessing as that's the priest offering a prayer to God for me, and it's going to be answered. Her heart was no longer downcast. Verse 19. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord and then went back to their home at Ramah. Elkanah made love to his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him. When her husband Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill the vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always. Do what seems best to you, her husband Elkanah told her. Stay here until you have weaned him, and only may the Lord make good his word. So the woman stayed at home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. And after he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, a skin of wine, and brought them to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When the bull had been sacrificed, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, pardon me, my Lord, as surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here. This is several years back. I'm the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life, he will be given over to the Lord. And he worshiped, that is Samuel, I believe, worshiped the Lord there. I don't know what Elkanah's vow in this passage was, and none of the commentators I looked at knew either. So I'm not disappointed in myself. Hannah waited until the boy was weaned, took young Samuel up with her. I don't know how many times Eli had seen this. These were such bad days. How many people would want to give their child into that kind of service? People knew what's going on. They knew what was going on. They knew that just as well as the people in the Middle Ages knew that the prostitutes had their own corners around the cathedral. People understood, and how many would give? Hannah had made a vow, and she gave her son to the Lord. So she approached him, reminded him of her of what had transpired several years before, and turned over her son to Eli. So now, verse 28, I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. And he, Samuel, worshiped the Lord there. She fulfilled her vow. Imagine her feelings. Imagine her feelings. Her child. Her little kid who's just been weaned. I can't imagine. We don't know what kind of turmoil is going through her heart. What we do know is what is recorded at the beginning of chapter 2. And these, and I'm only going to read the first few lines. And you of course, can read it when you go home. My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord, my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one beside you. There is no rock like our God. You hear echoes of that in Mary's Magnificat? Hannah was given a son and Mary was given a son, and they both gave their sons to the Lord. And look at the results. All right? There's another episode in the story, and it begins at verse 18 of chapter 2. But Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy wearing a linen ephod. That's a kind of, you know, the high priest and the priest were given these ephods, these kind of ceremonial aprons that they wore with jewels and stitching and all that stuff. And then apparently some of the temple servants, like Samuel, were given a simplified version of that. And so Samuel wore a little ephod. And each year, his mother made him a little robe and took it. He's a growing boy. Took it to him when she went up with her husband to offer the annual sacrifice. She didn't miss a sacrifice after that, right? Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife, saying, "May the Lord give you children by this woman to take the place of the one she prayed for and gave to the Lord." Then they would go home, and the Lord was gracious to Hannah. She gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. She had given her son to the Lord, and the Lord blessed her with other children, which was the desire of her heart, even though she must have had a great hole in her heart from missing Samuel. And Eli blessed her. And how much Hannah looked forward to that annual visit to see her firstborn Samuel. All right, what lessons can we take from Hannah? Let me suggest to you this. What is your barrenness? Is it a troubled relationship? Is it an unsaved relative? Or friend? Is it a financial need? Is it something in the future that you dread? Or is it something in the past that you regret? Whatever it is, whatever your area of barrenness analogous to Hannah's is, I think we can say it can involve the following. Wait through the hard time for the miracle that will come. Wait through the hard time for the miracle that will come. We went through several hard times over the years, and God always came through. Always came through. Remember, Jesus taught this lesson too, didn't he? They came and said, "Your friend Lazarus is dead." Or they say he's dying. "Your friend Lazarus is dying," something like that. And what did Jesus do? He waited 2 days. It just says, that's what it says. He waited. He wasn't busy. He wasn't occupied with something else. He just waited for 2 days. You know why? Because he wasn't going to raise Lazarus from illness. He was going to raise him from the dead. He was going to have a greater miracle because he waited. And maybe God is making us wait to show us a greater miracle in the end. And look what happened to Hannah. The second point I would make is that God answers by his clock, not mine. God answers according to his clock, not mine. How many times did, I could have looked it up, I guess. How many times did Jesus say, my time has not yet come? A few times. My time has not yet come. In the meantime, just keep praying, keep praying, keep praying, and God will answer on his clock. The third point I would make is, if you make any vows, keep them. If you make any vows to God, keep them. It must have torn her heart out to leave her son at the temple, but she kept her vow. And then at home she could say to her neighbors, my boy is at the temple. Or at the sanctuary. And then the last point I would make is this. God will answer. God will answer. How many hundreds of times had Hannah prayed for a son? And then God answered her prayer. He answered her prayer. He kept her waiting for years, but he answered her prayer. He will answer. As the judge said, because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice. Let's keep bothering God. Let's keep asking until he answers.